Hailing frequencies open, and welcome to Star Trek Discoverage, the live podcast that boldly goes into excruciating detail about this week's episode of Star Trek Lower Decks. I'm your host, Aaron Coker, a.k.a. Caliban, and in communism, all hats are the same size. Sitting in again tonight in place of my usual co-host, Ella Pearson, is my co-host on the Just Enough Trope podcast. She's also the host of the Sailor Noob podcast, and she's a frequent Enterprising Individuals and Discoverage guest. It's Mika and Hana. Mika, welcome back to Discoverage.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
It's great to have you. And normally I would say, well, we haven't talked in a while, but that's not true.
No, it's not.
We've talked very recently.
Yeah.
In fact, you have been on Enterprising Individuals. You're on the most recent episode.
I am.
Talking about what we usually talk about at this point in the show, talking about the news.
Yeah. It's a me. You go there.
It's a me.
Yeah.
You like a page boy cap, you know, like a cap instead of the, well, it's kind of Morrow's, he's got like a, what is that? It's like a button cap. It's like
That's a good question. What is Mario's?
Yeah. We got a lot of questions about Mario. But they're not getting answered tonight. We were talking about news, and we can maybe preview some of the things that we were kind of talking about on Enterprising Individuals. But we were talking about the announcement that have been made recently, or the announcements, about projects in development and projects that will be coming out, well, hopefully relatively soon, in TV and also in the movies.
Yeah.
Talking about Star Trek IV and maybe Star Trek IV.
Which one is going to be which is what I want to know.
Which one's going to win the race?
Yeah. Will it four be four or will it be five? I don't know.
4.2, 4A.
Yeah.
4B.
Or will it be, the words just went right out of my head. Will it be the...
Just 20
more
minutes
on this. Spock's got a goatee.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Words. You're on a Star Trek show, so be careful.
I know.
Otherwise, there'll be a shakeup, like the management shakeup, bringing it right back.
Oh, my goodness.
At Viacom CBS, which after all that business of taking the TV side and Paramount, the movie side, and sticking them together, they will now be dividing their movie and TV divisions. So.
Yeah.
I wave goodbye to TV people being in the movies. I don't know. It seems like we're going to keep them separate. Still,
I want my chocolate with my peanut butter, and now get that peanut butter out of my chocolate.
Yeah.
No.
What about marshmallow? Let's try that. and we had talked, you can hear all this on the episode, I guess, but we had talked about how there was a specific person at the studio that was kind of saying, no, we don't need any Star Trek. And like all these ideas would come up and then they get knocked down by this person that was in charge. But so far we have two Star Trek films, two of them, mm-hmm. that are currently in development.
Yes.
One that has actually been announced. It's on the slate for 2023.
Right.
Being directed by Matt Shakman, who is late of WandaVision.
Mm-hmm.
And written by Lindsay Beer and Geneva Robertson-Dwarrett.
Okay.
And then there's another project which is in development currently, but was announced that they had been started working on a script being written by Kalinda Vasquez.
Uh-huh.
So we got two films.
We do. And there were other films that we had heard whispers about that we have now heard there's a kibosh on. But we have two films.
Well, don't give everything away. Some of that's going to be what people can hear if they go to...
I mean, go to Enterprising Individuals.
Okay, you take it.
And I check out this week's episode where...
So, I don't know. I honestly kind of feel like they're competing. Because this
is... A little
bit. Because, you know, you talked about those other projects that shall not be named here.
Yeah.
But those are dead.
Yeah.
Kind of because of these, even though these seem like better bets. So I wonder if, obviously, if one of them is behind the other one, its continuation will be, rely on whether the first one is any good or not.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe, I don't know, Paramount finds out they don't have as much money as they thought they did. Maybe one of these gets liquidated and we don't know.
Right.
And in that case, it would be the cheaper one would go forward.
Oh, well, isn't that the way that you usually goes?
The one that doesn't need Thor in it is going to go forward.
Yeah.
So anyway, if you like Thor. This kind of talk, there's like an hour of it on our most recent episode. I'll mention it at the end of the show, so don't worry about it. Right now, we need to talk about the sixth episode of the second season of Lower Decks. It's an episode called The Spy Humongous, and we're here to talk all about it. But first, as always, a warning. We're setting a course for the spoiler zone listeners, so be warned. We're glad you've decided to join us, but if you haven't seen the episode, spoiler spoilers are incoming. The official synopsis for The Spy Humongous is, Anomaly Consolidation Day on the USS Cerritos leaves the lower deckers with mixed emotions. Captain Freeman attempts to negotiate peace on the Packlet homeworld.
Mm-hmm.
This episode was written by Jean Cochran. It's not really Jean. I just said Jean because it's Star Trek. He's also known as Cochran. We'll get to it. He was the executive story editor for the first season of Lower Decks and is a co-producer on the series. He also wrote for the shows The Millers and Kevin Can Wait. And he appeared on the 23rd season of Survivor South Pacific, and came in 8th place. But he returned for the 26th season, Survivor Caramon, and ultimately won the title of Sole Survivor and the $1 million prize. And then he went, I'm going to produce and write TV. Did do that.
Okay.
And he's doing it now.
All right. Great.
But he's very competitive.
I guess I can tell. His name is Cochran.
He's always got to have out the last little coffee.
Yeah, right.
This episode was directed by Bob Suarez. And Suarez previously directed We'll Always Have Tom Paris, which we talked about 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
And he directed 3 episodes of the first season. The star date for the episode is 580-53.9. And here's some facts about the episode. We find out Ensign Casey's name for the first time. It was unofficially revealed in the closed captions from Strange Energies, the premiere of this season. But now we know it's Casey. And the Kzinti Ensign, who appeared in Mugato Gumato, appears in this episode again and has speaking roles, although not a character name. I don't think they ever say his character name.
No.
And there's a little gag for fans of the animated series, which the creators of Lower Decks definitely are. Uh-huh. But when he is showing Boimler how to do good posture, he bends over and he's like kind of drooping down, you know,
yes.
like Sad Cat or Angry Cat or whatever the meme cats are.
Yeah.
And that is almost exactly the position that one of the Kzinti, the telepath Kzinti, has in the episode The Slaver Weapon.
Okay.
So that's like, that's a reach.
That's deep.
That is a cut.
Yeah.
That cut is the deepest.
All right.
The guest cast includes this week, as we mentioned last week, Brian Posehn appears as several different Packleds, the Queen Packled, Out of Breath Packled, and Packled Delegate 2. Reach for the stars.
Important.
Gabriel Ruiz appears as Castro, and Carl Tart once again returns as Kayshawn.
Yes.
What did you think about The Spy Humongous?
Wow.
I'll tell you right now, here's a little joke. Here's a deep cut joke. It's not that humongous.
Right. No. He could have been.
It's a humongous spy story.
He could have been.
He's not that humongous.
No.
He's kind of sus, though.
He was definitely sus.
Did you get that?
Oh, yeah.
The spy humongous?
Yeah, shouldn't like Among Us, yeah.
Mm-hmm. A spy humongous? That's what threw me off.
Oh.
Because you could use the phrase...
Oh, maybe.
The spy among us seems like you've already identified the spy. I feel like that phrase is used when you're saying, there's a spy among us.
Yes.
Because we don't know who the spy is.
Correct.
Later, after you've caught the spy and put him out the airlock, you can go, remember when we airlocked the spy among us?
Right.
So I don't know why they picked the spy humongous for this, but it's a tiny, tiny little gripe.
I mean, that's definitely... Yeah, okay. I get exactly what you're saying. And like, Among Us is definitely... I'm thinking about it now that you brought it to my attention even more. Like, I mean, he even goes out the airlock. himself.
Well,
so... And they save him.
So he didn't spend so much time on the island that he wasn't able to keep up on memes from 2020.
Right. Exactly.
Got all those.
I did not... super enjoy this episode.
And do tell.
I think one major reason why is I'm not a huge fan of the Packleds. Nothing against the Packleds themselves. I just don't think that they're that fascinating. And we've now taken this group of aliens who were not violent. Aliens, and you know, but they weren't very bright, and we're reminding them not being very bright for humor.
Yeah,
I wish it was funnier?
Is it, if so, here's, this has been a question since their appearance in Samaritan Snare, just say that three times fast.
Yeah, no kidding.
In 1988 or 9 or whatever it was. Are they offensive? Are they making fun of?
I feel like there might be a little offensive, people? Too. Yeah, I do feel like they're a little offensive.
Well, CBS disagrees. But the problem with them is, and I keep, I don't do it every week, but I'm going to compare this to Rick and Morty.
Mm, go ahead.
I think that's a fair comparison.
I do too.
Considering they're both, you know, wacky sci-fi shows.
Yeah.
And the guy who runs this show worked for a couple years on Rick and Morty. And I think that it's a template that they are following.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a huge fan of Rick and Morty. I watch it intermittently. I don't really watch Rick and Morty, you know, every week. But Rick and Morty knows when it's got a thing, here is a race that does this.
Right.
It knows to go through all the beats of that,
mm-hmm.
and then get rid of that when they're done.
Right.
So it's like the Meeseeks. You know, the Meeseeks are the thing. You hit the box, the Meeseeks comes out, he fulfills a task, then he is destroyed and obliterated, and he wants that to happen.
Right.
So what happens if he can't do that?
Yeah.
Or what happens if there's a ton of them? Yes. Or what if the Meeseeks start replicating Meeseeks' box? And the answer is 22 minutes of an episode of Rick and Morty.
Right.
I don't feel like they ever... They've got all these things, you know, like the Packlids and... Kazinti or whatever. They've got all these things that are ready-made to take from Star Trek, but they never, like, run them down. They do the internet jokes.
Yeah.
You know, like having Kayshawn on, and it's like, okay, ready, they're memes or whatever, right?
Right.
But they never, in my opinion, like, go through it all. And tonight we got a little bit of that, and I liked it.
Hmm.
I guess we kind of see, I don't know if this is the Packlids thing, but we kind of see them fast forward through, they develop, like, feudalism, and then they develop like revolution, and then they develop democracy, and then they develop like dictatorship, like in the course of like 90 seconds.
Okay, that's it. You bring up a really interesting
point.
So
is that their thing? Like before it was, you know, make it go. We want to be strong. And
right.
then they came, and then the twist for Lower Decks was, oh, they've discovered like violence.
Yeah.
And there's a suggestion of like an undercurrent of frustration that they've, you know, maybe been made fun of, and they realize, maybe they get smart enough to realize everybody always makes fun of them, and now they're, you know, going to come and do some damage.
Right.
But is there a thing that they, like, if we give them enough time, by season four, will they be, you know, better than the Federation? You know, where, what's the bit? I don't get the bit other than they're just dumb.
That's, I think, my biggest hang-up is I don't get the bit either.
And I see that with other stuff. Like, Kayshawn was on again tonight, and he didn't do any Kayshawn stuff?
I was going to mention that. Yes. Right. Like, and I was like, wait, what? I think maybe he said one kind of thing
he went like Shaka or something like that.
Yeah.
Which is like, oh, that's, okay, it's like his expletive or something.
Yeah, right.
Even though that doesn't make any sense. That's not how it's used in his culture.
Right.
But you can even refer to things that we've seen on the show already that he's been there for, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Boimler had the hot beans on his head or something is like somebody who's really going to try a crazy plan.
Yes!
You know, we could do... So I just don't think... They have all these, like, tools in their box, and they're like, this is a shiny tool, and then it goes back in the box.
Well, it's like, it's like they... I wonder, it's like a writer's room, right? But it's almost
everything's a writer's room.
Well, maybe not, but I feel like... Like you're saying, like they kind of forget about the tools that they have.
That being said, I've been complaining all series about how a lot of times I feel like the storylines don't mesh or they don't flow well, or it's a lot of like, you know, and then instead of therefore.
Right. I get what you're saying.
To use a writer's saw. And I felt like this episode was good. They had three different stories. Every single story all came together at the end.
Well, that's true.
And there wasn't anybody, not that it's bad to have somebody just laboring in some other story and it's rewarding and funny, but like they all connected.
Mm-hmm.
And structurally, I thought this was super solid.
Mm-hmm.
Coming from a guy who has written other comedy shows, which themselves have the DNA of Seinfeld and Taxi and whatever else. So I think that it was like a real comedy writer script. That being said, it just wasn't that funny. There's like wasn't a lot of jokes.
Yeah.
I got what I wanted and I'm not very happy about it. And I'm like, oh, is the secret to Lower Decks like this the crazy balls out constant references? Like, when they settle down and do, like, a real half hour of comedy TV, is it like, oh, man, maybe this isn't good?
Maybe this
is so I'm all turned around now.
Yeah. I got a little... What did you think about them being on cleanup duty and everything?
I feel like I don't think it's anything unique. Like I know feel they like get, seen them I know do... they gave it a little name and it's artifact duty or whatever, but like I feel like they've done stuff like this.
Me too.
Many times. There's nothing special about this, you know. If there was like a hot fudge sundae day or something like that, and then later there's like mountain climbing day, and then later there's like calligraphy day or whatever, they're all different stuff that they could screw up, but they're always just picking things up that explode or do something to them, right?
Yeah, I feel like that happens all the time.
It's always happening.
Yeah.
And did you I thought this in weeks previous and I haven't said anything, but tonight it really got to me, or I just really noticed it. Do you notice how like everything that happens is like kind of fantasy?
What do you mean?
Here's what I mean. I know that, like, having sex with a ghost candle, you know, like having, you know, a Talaxian and a Vulcan be merged into one new gestalt being, like, all of Star Trek is, like, fantasy when you think about it. Yeah, it's all, you know, soft science. But there's usually, like, technobabble, or there's a book of science for the show. That makes sense.
Yeah, sure.
But they did keep running into things that are like, oh, I dropped this skull, and so it becomes like it's a frog spirit that possesses this guy, and then he blows up, and then there this juice turns into a thing, and then and I become a slug or something, and it eats me, and it's how was any of this?
All of it was like what you were saying.
Yeah, wouldn't like this be where science. You would look at the things like the effects or the aliens or the. You know, potions or things that Geordi or other people have seen in other episodes. Wouldn't this be a chance to come back? It's like they just wrote like a Rick and Morty thing. Only Rick and Morty would be, it would be a specific sight gag. I always point to like the thing from the pilot where Morty breathes the gas, but it's a sentient gas. And then he like spits out a baby that's running with it because they're running away. And then the baby, as they're running, like turns into a young boy and then turns into a man and then turns into an old man and falls over and dies. Like, that's his whole existence.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that.
And Morty's like, oh, my God. Rick's like, don't think about it.
I feel like Rick says don't think about it, like, a lot.
Yeah. I just expected, like, a little more from these things. But they don't connect to, you know, like I said before, the very wide field of Star Trek science. I mean, it's a weird thing to complain about. But I noticed, it's like Ghostbusters. You know how Ghostbusters is supposed to be science, but it's all ridiculous because they're fighting ghosts, you know? You'll tell them about the Twinkie, right? But she even said, like, oh, he's going through full molecular engorgement. And I'm like, that's something that Ray would say.
It is!
It's Ghostbusters science.
Yeah. It even kind of reminds me of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man a little bit.
Well, yeah. Have they ever fought a candy creature or a... hot fudge creature? I got hot fudge in the brain.
I don't think so.
Well, someday.
Not Sunday.
I'll pay you later.
Okay. All right.
What else? Go ahead.
I was going to say, didn't they prank call...
You get the feeling that they had,
the guy who, like, the creature that killed Tasha Yar. What?
Yeah, the episode was 24 and a half minutes long. You get the feeling that the Miller's episodes are 22 minutes long.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, oh.
Yeah.
We need a thing.
We need to tack something on here. Just what are we going to do?
Armas.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. All right.
That'll be 2 or 3 minutes. Great.
Yeah, I don't know. It's fine. So something else I noticed tonight, just since we're doing the philosophy of Lower Decks, because it's a new show, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of. Why is everybody either completely self-serving or a total goldbreaker on the ship? You ever notice that? Like, I want to like Captain Freeman. Yeah. And I think that she can be sometimes in opposition to our Lower Deckers.
Oh, yeah.
She can be the bad guy, but still... want to do her job and be good at it.
Yes.
And every time, this literally 3 times in a row, at least, it's opened with her saying, this is going to be great for me. And then once I get this, I'm going all the way up to the top. And I'm not saying that Starfleet officers don't have, you know, ambitions, but it's completely like she's just hates her job except for the fact that she just wants be promoted. It's all self-serving.
I get what you're saying. Like, it's like, I don't feel like we've really seen another captain express something.
Well, we
like
haven't seen that. A ton of other captains.
No, and I guess most of the captains that we've followed have been on, like, I mean, like, flagship ships or...
Yeah, like Riker, you know, we get Riker. We don't have to draw Riker. We understand right. That character.
Exactly.
or, like, just the Lower Deck people. Like, they don't like to do any of the stuff.
The menial jobs.
You know, it's okay to have... You know, one Boimler likes it and Tendi likes it because they're the nerds. That's fine, you know. But like, then they get the chance to like not do it, or and they just quit. And if you think about the Lower Decks characters in the episode Lower Decks from TNG, like they've all got their own personalities, but they're all, you know, we are Starfleet. Like they're gonna do their jobs. And it made me realize it's MASH. This is MASH. Or at least it should be MASH.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Yes.
Like, you know, Freeman is the commander, and she's like, oh, these guys, you know. And then, like, you know, Mariner's the Hawkeye, and and that's it. There's no BJ Honeycutt or or Trapper John, really. It's just Mariner.
Yeah, right.
Right? That's what it should be. But the thing about, like, Hawkeye is that he's going to drink martinis all day, and he's definitely going to mess with Frank, and he's going to be stealing the colonel's desk or whatever. But when the wounded come in...
He's going to be doing
we
a
go
job.
Fix the wounded.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. I do think it's a little weird to hear a captain, like, talk so much about, like, I'm going to do this, and this is going to be great for me, and, like, I think maybe we're supposed to get the idea that the Cerritos...
Captain Janeway, you mean?
Well, yeah. We'll talk about that in a second.
What are we talking about right now?
but we're supposed to get the idea that the Cerritos is not very well respected, and so they get all these...
Do you get that idea?
Yes, I get...
I never hear anybody really talk about the Cerritos, because we're really only spending time, like, on the Cerritos.
I know, but we get the idea from, like, largely from what Captain Freeman says, that they get, like, kind of the crap missions.
Well, today, I mean, usually the whole premise, which they've kind of went back to in the first episode of this season, is that they're the second contact ship.
Mm-hmm.
But tonight they're negotiating a peace treaty with the only race that the Federation is at war with, as far as we know.
Yes, that's true. Calling her Captain Janeway, I know it's supposed to be funny. I didn't find it funny, and then it kept happening. But also...
So I guess I don't get the joke.
No, I don't either. And you brought...
Oh, is this my idea?
Well, I don't want to take credit for it. So I feel like you should share what you brought up.
I might have shared it on my own.
Yeah, go ahead.
Eventually.
Go for it.
Is it a joke that it's like, oh, a female captain is Janeway? Like there's one female captain? Because I can name like six.
I can name more too. I think
like
that...
why do the Paclids think that she's Janeway? They just came up with this runner and they didn't question whether it... worked. And to be honest, they got a little, the longer, like most runners, the longer it went, the more funny it got. Until it was pretty funny, but, and this is the next thing I want to talk about. Did I say talk? I guess I meant complain. That's what I mean when I say talk. The last part was funny, but not as funny as it could have been if they got the timing right. I don't feel like the timing on a lot of these jokes are well done. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it is because they're trying to get in as many as they can. But it doesn't mean you can give up on timing. And so there's a thing when Tendi becomes a giant scorpion mantis thing.
She's like a scorpion mantis.
Yeah, and I was like, is that from an episode? I don't recognize what that is. The big slug.
It.
Yeah, isn't this supposed to be a reference show? But anyway, it's this cute thing, and she gets on her, and she does the thing. And so later on, like, you know, they finally meet back up with Boimler, and Boimler's like, what happened? Did she touch some strange orb? And Mariner says, no way. It was a cube.
Yeah.
But I did the timing right. She just went, no way, it was a cube.
You need to pause briefly.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's funnier if you let that sink in.
It is.
And the same thing and we know they didn't have to rush because they had an extra 2.5 minutes. After they beam away, you know, the spy comes back.
Yes.
And it does a bit from Billy Madison. Mrs. Libby's car is green. All the information's worthless. But they don't know that, right?
No.
And so then the captain beams away and he's like, wait a minute. You just be Captain Janeway.
Yeah, right.
But again, they didn't wait that long.
No.
They just say the thing right through. So I don't know.
And I think you bring up a really good point, though, because timing is such a big part of, you know, humor and making something funny. Take it from somebody who isn't very funny. I know that that's a big part of it.
That doesn't make any sense. Your recommendation doesn't make any sense. I got no idea what I'm talking about, so listen up.
Well, I can appreciate humor even if I'm not very funny myself. So
here's an example. So just to do rule of threes, and then we'll flip it. Here's a great example. The whole thing with I just said his name before and I can't remember, but the one guy, the meanest girl of the red shirts.
Yes,
because they're doing this is a Mean Girls thing. I've always said that Starfleet feels like high school or college, and they're wisely playing that up in this episode. I liked the whole red shirt thing. There were no big payoffs to any of the stuff that they did.
I liked it too.
But he finally gets to get into the chair.
Yes.
Ransom's like, all right, get in there. And he's like, oh, I can't. Finally, I get to sit down and be active. All right, get out of here. And he's like, oh, thanks. It's a great honor. But then that was good. The timing was great on that.
Did you get the feeling, too, like I know they were, like, supposed to be, like, super into their idea of, like, what it would be like to be a captain, but, like, I mean, it was supposed to be, like, you know, okay, we're acting. Not only do we do a makeover, but now, like, you're going to do this monologue
like Crusher's plays on the D. I thought it was very telling that when he's giving his version of the big speech, he's on the Enterprise D bridge? Why would he be on the Enterprise D bridge?
Yeah, why not make it the Cerritos?
Is it because Mike McMahon's favorite show is TNG? To him, he's just thinking about being on a Starfleet bridge. It could be the Cerritos bridge. It could be the Titan bridge. It could be the Enterprise E bridge.
We know he loves Voyager,
which is the flagship of the... if he loves Voyager, it could be Voyager's bridge.
Yeah.
But why was it the Enterprise D's bridge?
I don't. No.
Are they playing to the audience? Are they figure it's all old TNG heads who are watching this show? They might not be wrong.
I think maybe they're playing to the audience. I guess I kept thinking, like, I kept waiting, like, to see some of the other red shirts do their captain monologues. Like, this is how I would do it.
I feel like that
could have made it a little stronger because it was so focused on Boimler. Yeah. Like, not only are we going to give you a makeover.
One of the compliments I'm going to give the episode is that I feel like this is, you know, this last week was good too. This is a good use of characters.
Yes.
Having... You know, when we find out that Tendi signed them all up for this thing.
Oh, and that was a good reveal.
And the fact that, you know, Mariner does want, it's okay to have it. Yeah, sure. Some characters' motivation should be, I don't want to do a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But then they're going to conflict with the other character that does want to do all the stuff.
Right.
And we've got that repeated a couple times in the cast. But I thought that, like, having them play off of each other and the tension comes from that is the best thing to do. Instead of just Mariner leading everybody through a series of... Batleth fights or Mugato fights or something like that. But yeah, I agree. Like having the other red shirts and we never see really anything about them.
No.
I was reminded of, I'm thinking of the episodes where Bashir deals with the other genetically enhanced people.
Yep.
And it's like an ensemble comes on and we're going to do a little ensemble thing today. Yes. And it's going to be, you know, you're going to get a thing. You're going to get a thing. We're going to get to know these characters. And instead, you got to hire voice actors for that. If you just draw a lady standing in the background, like, you know, she could just be there.
Yeah, right.
She doesn't have to be a character. So I wish they would, like, take that a little more seriously.
I wish they would, too, because...
A living storybook? What's the obsession with fantasy? Maybe that's the theme for this. For this season.
It was a living storybook and it was like the Three Little Pigs. Yeah. And it was terrifying. But not funny. Just terrifying.
Anything else that you wanted to say?
I mean, I guess I liked how Captain Freeman tricked the Packwoods into telling her...
reverse psychology.
Yeah.
Wait till they invent that.
Yeah.
We don't want to be strong.
Yeah.
He just sits back, nodding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good one.
I could see that. Yeah.
I can't really think of anything either. Like I said, I actually think that this was a pretty good episode that I didn't like much and wasn't very funny. So.
Well, there you go. I mean, the three stories did come together really nicely. So, I guess I'll say one other thing. I did like that when the red shirts got to the cafeteria and saw the crises that was Tindy's praying mantis scorpion, they just started giving
epic speeches. Oh, yeah, and their solution is everybody's speeching. Yeah, okay, that was good. That was the best part of the show.
Yeah, and they're, like, going over each other. Follow- and, like, the first time, like, there was, like almost, like, heart eyes in, like, other ensigns' eyes, you know, just like, oh, my gosh. And then it was just, like, too
they're
much.
All just talking over each other.
Yeah.
That was the best part, followed closely behind by them actually paying off the central island that has all the replicators.
Yeah.
Which is just a design thing that has existed up to this point. But somebody who had seen the show, probably the writer, was like, oh, I'm thinking about this like it's a real thing in 3D space. How do I incorporate it? And so Boimler's like ordering a thing. Then he runs around the corner to order something else. Then he runs around the corner and she's chasing him around the island.
Right.
Like that was good use of space.
It was.
And for a space that doesn't exist.
And it also paid off the joke from earlier in the episode that she laughed at him when he spilled food on himself, which wasn't really that funny.
Well, I don't know why he knew that. Was there a line about how laughter would bring her out of it or something?
No, he just said, oh, I know what to do.
Okay. Yeah, whatever. So he knew what to do.
He knew what to do because of the cube or what have you. So
the cube.
The cube. Yeah.
From from comic strip Live 3, The Planet.
Right.
These people, they value laughter. They've built it into their technology.
Yeah.
I think that is going to be it for our show this week, but I want to thank our listeners for joining us, and if they like what they hear, and I could probably stop talking about them like they're not here, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at EISTPOD for updates and to get notified when new episodes of both Enterprising Individuals and Discoverage, this show, are released. You can tweet to us on the show by using the hashtag Discoverage or email us at EISTPOD@gmail.com. Also, while you're on the internet, why not head to your listening platform of choice and subscribe to our show feed. Give us a rating and a review because it really helps us out. And if you want to help the show grow, stop by our Patreon page at patreon.com/EISTPod. And as always, if you like the show, tell a friend. Discoverage will return on September 23rd, next Thursday, for the 7th episode of Season 2 of Star Trek Lower Decks. It's entitled, again, we don't know. We should just start making up titles.
Yeah, they're just teasing us out. Like, why not have it the episode next week? You know,
it's called Devil in the Mark, and a new ensign comes on, and I think he's possessed. But that doesn't make any sense, because God's not real, right? And then we have to, like...
What?
Let's see Lower Decks tackle that one.
Yeah,
now, we don't know what it's called, but according to IMDb,
yeah,
Jeffrey Combs will be appearing on the show.
Oh.
Playing all the roles.
Yeah, right. I think I heard he's playing some sort of robot or machine or something like
named
that.
Amicus, yes.
Yeah, right.
Amicus, a lawyer robot?
Oh my goodness.
Have they done a good law one yet? They did Veritas, where they're on trial. But
yeah,
have they
done... think that's the closest.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
We just talked about, we will be talking about Veritas on Backtrekking soon.
Oh,
so
awesome.
Not a very good plug, but at Backtrekking on Twitter. We'll be here next Thursday to cover the episode and going live once again at 8 p.m. Central, so join us then. You can follow us on Twitter or Facebook at EISTPod to get notified when we're live and broadcasting. And in the meantime, check out our main show, Enterprising Individuals, at enterprisingindividuals.com. Every Wednesday on the show, I and a special guest discuss in excruciating detail a selected episode from a Star Trek series. We also have news from the Trek sphere and interviews with special guests. And our latest episode is all about the news, and we have a very special guest, of course, Mikan Hanna herself.
Hello.
Talking about all the news coming out of Star Trek Day last week with updates on Trek shows and films in development. So go to enterprisingindividuals.com or wherever you get your podcasts to hear that. Mika, thanks as always for joining me to talk about tonight's episode of Lower Decks, and
thanks
remind people
me.
Where they can find you online.
Yeah, you can find me at Mikan Hanna on Twitter and justenoughtrope.com, and Sailor Noob is wherever you listen to podcasts.
And what is coming up on Just Enough Trope?
Oh boy, what is coming up on Just Enough Trope? We are going to be talking about the new show, Why the Last Man, and I am going to have to jog my memory because apparently I read the comic of this and I don't remember. But so that's hopefully the show will help me remember.
Yeah,
but
we'll just do an extended Marx Brothers bit about why the last man.
No, why?
Well, you see, he's the only person left. It's a world full of women.
But why the last
why
man?
The last man? Yeah.
I'll just pretend I'm a 2-year-old. How about that?
Okay. Because
2-year-olds ask why all the time. Anyways, sorry.
Oh, okay. All right. I made that connection. Do 2-year-olds ask why, or is it like 4-year-olds that ask why? 2-year-olds, not very verbal.
Oh, maybe it's then maybe it's 4-year-olds.
The terrible twos.
But yeah.
They're like a 3 or 4-year-old is really going to give you
why
the
why. Why is one of the favorite words. Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay.
Do you sometimes pretend to be a 2-year-old to eat free at Denny's?
Why?
Try that out sometime. Yeah, the last man. All right. Well, anyway, check out Just Enough Trope and Serially Noob. You know, we can do it at our link tree. Just Enough Trope has a link tree. Go to linktr.ee/Just Enough Trope, and you can find all of the shows on the network there. That is it for us. Thanks for listening, and we are signing off. This is Aaron Formica saying live long and prosper.